Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The United Nations says at least 576,000 people in Gaza are one step away from famine. Meanwhile, Joe Biden is seen musing about a potential ceasefire while enjoying an ice cream cone. This is the state of play. This is the politics of genocide. Crosstalking Palestine, I'm joined by my guest Lionel in New York. He is a legal and media analyst. In Tehran, we have Mohammed Mirandi. He is a professor at the University of Tehran. And in London, we cross to Mohammed Okunji. He is a lawyer and parliamentary candidate. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Mohammed Mirandi, let me go to you first in Tehran. I want to do a special call out right now about Aaron Bushnell and his extreme act of defiance to what he deemed as an active member of the military, U.S. military, is the U.S. government's pursuit of genocide. This story says almost everything we really need. If it was mentioned at all in mainstream media, it didn't give you any idea what was going on. It was very, very shameful and embarrassing for the profession. Mohammed.
Absolutely. And the mainstream media has been behaving in the most shameful manner since the genocide in Gaza began. But when I woke up to the news that he had burned himself alive in front of the Israeli embassy, and I saw the footage, it was for a few minutes, I really couldn't think. It was very painful. I never saw the footage till the very end, but he was very clear what he was after. He was very clear with regards to why he was doing this. He did it he acted like a soldier, and it will have an impact, because while the media immediately began to question his sanity and his background, those who knew him came out and said that he was a very decent person, a very likable person. And the facts are the facts. People across the United States, young people in particular, they are going to be, at least most of them, I believe, are going to be moved by this act of sacrifice. I would never advise anyone to do this, but now that he has carried out this act, we should all use this moment to humiliate those who are carrying out this genocide, to expose those who are carrying out what the president of Brazil said was similar to the Holocaust.
Yeah, and again, the media attacked him for that. But what the Brazilian president said was actually in context, but the media reported was without the context. That's what we expect here. All right, back to business. Lionel, two-thirds of Americans, independents, Republicans, Democrats, want a permanent ceasefire. The Joe Biden's administration ignores it. I thought this was a democracy.
Well, it is not a democracy because, as you know, we are not tyranny by the majority, and we don't. It's not majority rules. We are technically a constitutional republic. May I just ask one favor, just on what you just mentioned regarding Bushnell, if you don't mind?
Go ahead. Please.
This is killing me. It's funny how we select certain heroes. Remember the monk in 1963?
Yep.
Courageous. Bobby Sands, hunger striker.
Yep.
Cesar
yep.
Chavez.
Yep.
There was a Quaker who self-immolated during Vietnam. We love certain people who sacrifice, hunger strikes and the like. Do you know that after this happened, that various media reports referred to genocide in quotes, that this man referred to, quote, genocide. And one particular national outlet said at the end of this, if you are a family member or having ideations of suicide, or basically if you're crazy like this guy, seek help, and here's a number to call you. This is the way this story was skewed. And again, not lauding suicide, but did they not know that this wasn't some guy who misunderstood a football game or something, that this is going on? This is part and parcel. And going back to your question, how can there be a ceasefire when there's only one group firing? I still don't understand this terminology that we use. I'm a lawyer, and I'm trying to always find the definitions. So I'm at a loss across the board. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, Lionel, you know, in the context of the United States, and I know Mohamed Mirandi lived there for a while. I mean, it's not surprising, and you've said week after week that because of the media coverage, people just aren't aware. Okay, because I think if they were aware, they would act very differently. But we have a political class and a pliant media that wants to control the message. Aaron Bushnell's story is the best example. Okay, for domestic context here. Let's go to Mohamed. In London. One of the reasons, the primary reason why I wanted to do this program was watching Joe Biden eating an ice cream cone talking about the potential of a ceasefire. And I can't imagine being more tone deaf, okay? And plus, he was just thinking about the primary in Michigan, most likely. But it's so casual and so callous. Go ahead, Mohamed in London.
Well, I think it's been a long time the case that not many people pay attention to what Joe Biden is saying. If Joe Biden was fully in control of his own bodily functions, then that would be something. But he finds it difficult to climb up or down steps, finds it difficult to keep hold of where he is in his mind on many of his in many of his interviews. And so it's very clear that Joe Biden is not in control of whatever is going on with the United States, and there's clearly forces behind him that prop him up.
Well, Mohamed, if I could just interject here. I mean, we have, he was a senator. I think he was a senator in the Roman Empire. He's been around for so long. He's known as the most ardent Zionist in the Senate, and now as vice president and as president. We can look at his physical and mental failings, but make no mistake, he's Zionist through and through. He says it all the time, Mohamed.
Sure, but if that is the best that that particular grouping of people or power can prop up as their front, then it shows a deep weakness within the power base of that organization. Because if you have to pull out somebody who's frankly indistinguishable from a zombie, then it means that that's the best you can actually achieve. So I think that the phase in that form of politics is over. Zombies don't really exist. And after we have Biden, let's say, come off the center stage, then I hope and believe that the power that is behind Biden is now crested and will be falling. Certainly on the world stage, the pronouncements of what reality is meant to be by the Zionist lobby is certainly not landing with the public. And you mentioned that the public are not aware. I don't believe that's the case. I think in terms of the UK and the US as well, a vast majority of the public are very much against the war going on. And unfortunately, the media powers and the political powers are aligned against their own people. And it took a soldier to burn himself so that he could burn through the wall of that blockade against democracy and the will of the people in order to try and shine a light on the fact of that dam of resistance to what is, frankly, the covering up of a genocide. And we've been seeing that. These protests around the world have caused South Africa as a nation to be galvanized, to bring a case in the ICJ. That wouldn't have happened without the will of the people being so clearly articulated worldwide. And that court, which included a representative pushed forward by Israel as a judge, he himself also ruled against Israel on two of the 9 points. So really, there is no more quarter for this very clear breach of human rights, this very clear genocide.
Yeah, but Mohamed, the problem is that we're all on the same page here, but it's not stopping here. Mohamed, in Tehran, I mean, Lionel brought it up. I mean, when in an article that he read about Aaron Bushnell, they had a genocide in quotations. That's the problem, isn't it? Okay, they will not recognize what's going on. They refuse to do it. And if you do say it, you are shut down, you're disappeared, etc. Go ahead, Mohamed, in Tehran.
Yes, but you do become irrelevant gradually. The mainstream media, the corporate media, the legacy media, when they continue to support genocide, when they continue to hide this genocide or attempt to hide this genocide from the public, and people are seeing what's going on, they're undermining themselves. In the short term, they are, of course, supporting genocide. They're assisting genocide. They're a part of this genocide. The New York Times, the Washington Post, all the CNN, the BBC, all of them are guilty in this enormous crime. But they are undermining themselves. People, for a number of years now, the media has become increasingly questioned by ordinary people. It's become less respected by ordinary people. But now it's in free fall. Mm-hmm. So they can continue going down this road, but they're just quickening the pace of their own demise. I'm optimistic about the future, even though the genocide is ongoing, even though last night was particularly horrible when the Israelis slaughtered a large number of people who are waiting for aid. The footage is particularly painful to watch, despite the fact that every day it's been painful. But beyond that, I am optimistic about the future. No one believes the Western media. I mean, when I speak about no one, I mean the general public across the globe. Few people have any respect for the Western political establishment. And people across the world are increasingly seeking alternatives. BRICS, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, other regional organizations, these are all being given a boost. The irony is that we all want a ceasefire immediately for the sake of the people of Gaza. But the regime and the regimes that are losing because of the continued genocide are the United States, the Israeli regime, the British,
Mohammed,
and the French.
I have to jump in here. We have to go to a hard break, and after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on Palestine. Stay with RT. Okay, let's go back to Lionel. Lionel, you know, I started out the program talking about the inability of the Biden administration to reflect upon public opinion here. Are they going to continue down this same path? Because I think all of on this program and our viewers are a bit tired, to say the least, about it's really difficult and we're trying really hard, we're trying to mediate. I don't believe any of it. I think it's a complete smokescreen, okay? I don't think the Biden administration is going to do anything whatsoever to hinder Israel's goals, which is genocidal, it's displacement, and they'll just say, we did our best. And that will be good enough for some people, but I think, as our other guests have said, that is going to alienate in a very fundamental way as we move forward. Lionel.
I have mentioned to you before, Peter, that there is a definitional problem that people have in this country. When you say the word genocide, I am saying, look, that is a term of art from the Genocide Convention. This is about targeting in whole or in part of people. I think people have in their mind this World War II, I've mentioned this, cattle cars and the complete elimination of all Palestinians everywhere. I wish I could somehow change the name. Second of all, it's not just Biden. The other day, though, I saw an interview, you might have seen it as well, online or some platform, with Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders, the grandfather, the paterfamilias of the leftist, whatever. And he was asked, what will you do regarding the genocide? And he should have worked for Roger's thesaurus. He had every version of horror, pain, destruction, everything up and including that. And I'm going to throw one at you as well. I know, because my segment should be called Live from the Fishbowl, because I live in this world of people who sort of know, but also, Peter, they don't want to be bothered. But you mentioned the word Zionist. I could walk to you right with you to Times Square, which is a half a mile from here. We could offer $1,000 to anybody to define what that means in the context of what's happening now, and they will look at it by virtue of this regimentation as it being tantamount to some type of anti-Semitic slur.
Yeah.
That you're they so this is my problem. I'm sorry, gentlemen. I'm in this master class of erudition, and I'm from, you know, the fishbowl of people who don't understand this. And we also have, if you just one more thing, Ukraine to equally confuse people as to where it is on the map, who's who. And the other day, one more, Piers Morgan, in an interview with John Mearsheimer, was repeating this World War II. I mean, I'm in a parallel universe. There are people who overly complicate and obfuscate the
obvious.
Yeah, but
Lionel, I think this is very intentional. Let me go to Mohammed in London. This is intentionally done here. I mean, I think all of us should start talking about the Holocaust in Gaza. Just say it, okay? And if like people are like, huh, what? Then say, you know, well, then let's talk about what that really means. I mean, start educating people, start challenging people, and don't be afraid to say the truth, okay? Mohammed in London, one of the problems is what Lionel just brought up, the whole word Zionism and what it's supposed to invoke. I mean, look what happened to one of your former prime ministers. He was hounded out of office for being anti-Semitic, which is absurd on the face of it all. But they use that word in a very, very engineered way to silence people, not to make people think, but to silence them. Go ahead, Mohammed in London.
No, you're absolutely right. But like anything that's engineered, it has a certain tolerance limit. So the phrase anti-Semitism is now about to suffer from metal fatigue, where it's been so overused and bent out of shape that it will soon fail in the minds of all English-speaking people. And the reason for that is because the ICJ, the International Court of Justice, has been accused of being anti-Semitic. The UN has been accused of being anti-Semitic. The entire nation, appallingly, the nation that has most recently come out of apartheid, which is South Africa, has been accused of being anti-Semitic. And our own football heroes in the UK who stand against a genocide have been called anti-Semitic. So if, you know, we're talking about people like Gary Lineker here. So if you stand in the company of all these great institutions, then the word has no meaning soon enough. And I think that's really where a lot of the sensible and clear-minded people of the Jewish faith have been very vocal about the misuse of this word, because it actually does cover up for actual anti-Semitism, which has existed in Europe particularly. It's been a European problem for over 1,000 years. It's not really one that's laid at the feet of the Arabs. Nazism, anti-Semitism, all of these isms are issues that were born in Europe.
Yes.
And certainly not things that were in the Arab context. But that being said, I think those people in the Jewish lobby that have spent, or the Israeli lobby rather, who have spent so much time educating us what a Holocaust is through things like Schindler's List, have now actually taught us, we owe them a service, they've taught us exactly what a Holocaust looks like. And what we see in Palestine is exactly what we were taught on our screens on programs like Schindler's List and when we were growing up. So I think, you know, we need to just get past the rhetoric and remind people of their upbringing.
Yeah,
and what they
I think it's good to Tehran. I think, you know, if they put a gas chamber in Gaza, then people would start believing it. I guess maybe that's what has to happen here. You know, Mohammed, you know, they think if everything is anti-Semitic, then what is? I would say the most anti-Semitic thing is Zionism.
Yes, I think Zionism is anti-Semitic because they are the ones who are harming the Jewish people more than anyone else. And thankfully, many young Jews, as already pointed out, have become very, very vocal during the past few months. In fact, the New York Times article that was full of lies about rape and beheadings and all that on October the 7th, it was exposed by a Palestinian-led website in the United States and a website led by a Jewish friend of your show. So there are changes taking place across the board, both internationally but also locally. And when I mean locally, I mean in the West. I think that, as the previous guest pointed out, these words have been used so much by the Zionist lobby that they're losing their meaning. And I agree that people, many people in the United States, in that bubble, still feel that way. But the fact remains that every day we're seeing more and more images coming out of Gaza, a never-ending genocide, a never-ending Holocaust. And people will gradually see the reality. Those who don't want to accept reality never will.
Yeah.
But overwhelmingly, people across the world are seeing reality. And what the Israeli regime is doing is that they're cementing this hostility and animosity towards their racism, towards their ethnocentrism, and they're destroying themselves by continuing this. They should be the first to push for a ceasefire, because as I said, although Palestinians are being, women and children are being massacred on a daily basis, the Israeli regime and its Western allies, its Western allies are being demolished because of this genocide across the world. They can never speak about human rights again. They can human values again.
They can never talk about
being taken seriously.
They cannot never talk about the rules-based order anymore, okay?
Yes.
Because I have no idea what that means, particularly in what we're seeing going on in Gaza here. You know, Lionel, closer to home to you, the New York Times, again, is in extremely hot water. This ridiculous story about systematic rape on October 7th, which has been demolished in Israel, in the United States, on call out the gray zone there. Now they're looking at who are the co-authors of that monstrosity is, and lo and behold, it's a non-journalist and someone that worked for Israeli intelligence. Kind of a embarrassing situation to find yourself in. Lionel.
Embarrassing if you understand it. By the way, I'm going to steal the line about metal fatigue. That is such an apt analogy. If I might quote McLuhan, who said that little lies are very hard to keep secret, but big lies are easy because of our incredulity. Do you know what it would be like if any of you gentlemen were to stand up and say, you know, this rape story is false? What? You're denying rape? No, I'm denying this one. Wait a minute, you sick? So what happens is, if it's a big story, the incredulity of it is a problem. There's also something which is interesting. The more that we see images and pictures, the more we habituate to them. Peter, remember in our generation, when we first heard about Me Lai and Cy Hirsch, people stopped. And we didn't even see pictures until they
didn't even, we didn't even see pictures. Yes. You're absolutely right.
Yes. We did not understand. But today, perhaps by virtue of maybe our psychotropic medication, because of the fact that we've been habituated to this over and over and over, or we're just a completely different, maybe our psyche has been affected by some kind of a social parasite or virus, but nobody's reacting to this. And finally, gentlemen, what happens is people are told all the time, you don't understand. Hamas is a different, or they're, you this is an asymmetric war. They don't have uniforms. They don't have rules. You have to, what you might consider to be overkill is perhaps kind of a...
But Lionel, doesn't this really speak to, let me go to Mohammed in London here. Does this really speak to just the deep-seated racism within Western elites? I mean, it's easy to rationalize what's going on here. They're a lesser people, they're brown people, they're Muslim. I mean, it really plays into that. The reason why I'm bringing it up is that these same elites like to talk about their diversity in all of that. I mean, they're hypocrites to the core. Go ahead in London.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a recent study that analyzed the payments that would come into our leading party in opposition, the Labour Party, from pro-Zionist lobbies. And it turns out that 40% of our shadow cabinet have received funding from pro-Zionist organizations. Now, in terms of whether there's a deep-seated racism, sure, there is. There's any study in the West will show a degree of institutional racism across the board in any institution. But more problematic than that, really, is is the issue of being funded by a particular lobby to have a particular outcome.
Mohammed, I'm sorry, I have to jump in here. We have run out of time. Absolutely fascinating discussion with all three of you. I want to thank my guests in London, New York, and in Tehran. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, cross that rules.